Welcome to this episode of the Pharmaceutical Executive Podcast. I'm Miranda Schmalfus, editor for Pharmaceutical Executive. On this week's episode, I speak with George Hampton, CEO of Curex Pharmaceuticals. Their anti-obesity medication, Contrave, has been around for over 10 years. George and I dive into what the data looks like after 10 years, some of the ethical and regulatory problems with weight loss companies like Weight Watchers and Noom, how access to weight loss drugs can help the obesity epidemic that not only the U.S. is facing, but the world, and so much more. So, without any further ado, all right, George, so your company's anti-obesity medication, Contrave, has been around for over 10 years. So that's long before this current weight loss craze. So can you tell me about it?
Sure. Contrave was an idea that was sparked, you know, early in the 2000s, that we could actually put two different molecules, two different active ingredients together for the purpose of really offsetting the reasons a person craves food and the reasons a person gets hungry unnecessarily. And so Contrave works both on the mesolimbic system, which is kind of the brain's reward system for different things. So when people eat food and feel a high as a result, Contrave, you know, works to offset that. And on the hedonic system, whereby, you know, Contrave works on the overall hunger suppression that is important for patients suffering from obesity.
Very interesting. So a big holdout for patients with these types of medications is not knowing the what ifs of the longer term effects of some of these therapies. So with 10 years in the space, your company actually has that long term data to show and kind of say, we've already done it. We know how this affects people long term. So what has patient success and outcome looked like after a decade? And how does Contrave affect things like fertility, if at all?
I think the first thing is that all medications have side effects, and we are in the business of making sure that all patients and physicians understand that all medications have side effects. And we operate under what I think is the greatest regulatory body for food and medicine in the world, and that's the FDA. And so we have very detailed package labels. We have very detailed patient inserts and information to make sure people are comfortable. That said, you know, Contrave has been around for 10 years, and the individual molecules have been available for more than 25 years each, right? And so these active ingredients in Contrave as a combined tablet are incredibly well studied, and we know the side effects, and the package label really reflects that. Contrave is the number one prescribed oral anti-obesity medication in the United States. We are in 48 countries now, including the U.S., and so the product has an incredibly wide spectrum of use across the globe. And we now have, you know, a pharmaceutical database of patients that have, you know, makes up probably 640 or 650,000 patient years of experience from safety. So we know a lot about this product and patients. When a physician identifies the appropriate patient, they can take it safely, and the side effects are known, and they can come off the medication very quickly if they do experience something. That said, there's a lot of new medications on the marketplace, right? So these GLP-1s that have come out are very exciting, and they are critical to the overall treatment paradigm of getting obesity under control in the United States and around the globe. We've been waiting a long time for these products, and it's great that very large companies like Lilly have brought these products to market, because when Lilly, a great American pharmaceutical company, comes to market, they come to market not with just a product, but all of the services and support around the disease state for the patients and their families and the healthcare providers. So it's been very beneficial. But GLP-1s have been around since the early 2000s. There was a very low dose GLP-1 used for type 2 diabetes called Byetta in 2004, 2005, and as far back as that. It's still on the market today. The difference now is that they've found ways to really increase the dose of these GLP-1s to be, you know, to target weight instead of just targeting type 2 diabetes and A1C control.
So you mentioned this in your last answer, that your therapy is an oral medication, and the current trend seems to be with these injectable therapies. So how do these different kinds of therapies perform and fit into the current business landscape?
Well, so the reason isn't necessarily a trend. It's not something that, you know, a lab scientist says, hey, this will be better if we put it in an injectable. It really comes down to the size of the molecule and being able to actually needing to put it in an injectable as opposed to an oral tablet to be able to deliver the medication. And so, yes, the current GLP-1s are injectables. There are a number of GLP-1s under development that are oral. And I think everyone from, you know, Pfizer to Lilly and to Novo have talked about, you know, the possibility of bringing an oral medication for weight loss oral GLP-1 to market. So I think it could be in the future if if the profile of the product is safe and effective as judged by the FDA. Now that said, it does matter to patients, right? And so there is probably 15 to 16% of the population that is what we would call needle phobic. You just do not want to inject themselves, and so they are not going to be able to access a therapy now with that barrier. And so the oral comes into play there. Additionally, I mentioned the mechanism of action for Contrave is very different from the mechanism of action of a GLP-1. And so Contrave working on the mesolimbic system, the reward system of the brain, versus GLP-1 really working on the gut hormones of the body, are two different ways that a physician can choose two different types of medications to attack the underlying drivers of the patient's disease.
I'm sure there's probably like an ease of use too when there will be an oral versus an injectable for maybe like the same therapy. Maybe some people might say, I'm not great with remembering to take something every single day, you know? So maybe just the
Sure.
injectable once a month or something might be better for them in the kind of like a memory thing or just ease of use and easing the patient burden, which is something we always talk about.
That's exactly right. You have a pill burden, you have an injection burden, you have there's a product in development that would be an infused product, every 3 to 6 months. So, I mean, obesity is the number one untreated epidemic in the United States, right? We have over 100 million patients suffering from this disease, and we as a country have ignored it. We have not paid for therapies. We've not paid for services. We've not paid for devices. And honestly, we got what we paid for. We let the disease run in an unbridled manner, and it's now our largest country's health problem. So there are a lot of great pharmaceutical companies, a lot of great U.S.-based pharmaceutical companies, really looking at different ways to provide to tack this disease through medications.
A lot of people will find success through programs like Weight Watchers, Noom. So, what kind of ethical and regulatory problems do weight loss companies like those present?
So this is a new thing for us. First, let me just say, I think if we can pair a medication with a service or a service with a device or a digital technology around the medication to help the patient be more successful in their disease journey, we should do it, especially with something like obesity, right? The question is, can we do it safely? And so right now you have certain organizations that are operating these type of companies that you mentioned that there really isn't an agency in the United States that's set up to regulate them. And so, pharmaceuticals is very heavily regulated. Medical device, very heavily regulated. Pharmacy, very heavily regulated. Physicians, very heavily regulated, right? I think we can go on. It's manufacturing of pharmaceuticals, very heavily regulated. But right now, these organizations kind of fall between the cracks of the different agencies that are in place to maintain patient safety. And we heard, Dr. Carter from the FDA say, look, this isn't really in our purview. This isn't a mandate or something that we really have action. A mandate to take action on, nor do we have authority. And we hear that as well as we inquire on our own side from other different federal agencies. So I think this will be something that needs to be shaken out over time to make sure that we keep patient safety number one in everything that we're doing. It's the number one obligation of any company or person in the Medicare, in the medical field.
Absolutely. Patients first. We hear that from everybody, and that's where we have to be, you know, with creating these therapies and doing the research. So patient access in general, always a very big topic for us. You mentioned this before about how we ignored the obesity problem in the US. So how can access to these weight loss drugs help the obesity epidemic that not only the US is facing, but the world?
You hit the issue. The issue isn't that we don't have medications available today. The issue is that we have chosen not to make them accessible for the average patient. If you have a Cadillac health plan or you're very wealthy, you can get all the care you need. But if you are the normal person out there suffering from obesity, the coverage is blocked. And it's blocked at the government level and it's blocked at the commercial level. And that's incredibly frustrating knowing the toll that obesity is taking on the patients within our healthcare system and on the financials within our healthcare system. The collateral damage that obesity does to the body in every other disease state is more than any other disease. And so attacking the top of the pyramid is what we have to do. We can't do it if access is blocked. And we've seen a couple of examples here of, I think, companies moving forward in this regard. First is in Europe. They have been 3 to 4 years ahead of us in treating obesity, and they've gone through a number of different reimbursement schemes. And for the countries that are covering obesity, they're sophisticated now after years of trying. And so you see certain companies covering by phenotype, meaning pairing the right medication to the right patient, what determining what is driving that patient's disease, and then making sure they get the medication that's best suited to attack that underlying driver first, so there's not money wasted in the system. You see other countries that are just focused more on the dollars, where they want you to start with the least expensive medications before you start bringing on board the more expensive medications. In the U.S., we would call that step therapy. In the U.S., we've seen a couple things. First, we've seen some of the closed healthcare systems offer all of the products, but then do so in a way that is kind of a value-based system. So the physicians know the price of the products that they're prescribing and can make good financial decisions at the same time they're making good healthcare decisions. And those usually lead to great outcomes because every product is available. And there's one size, if there's one theme to take away, is that one size does not fit all for patients suffering from obesity. There's no chance that a single product is going to be a magic bullet that is going to solve obesity, because obesity is a chronic, multifactorial disease that is going to require not just the products and the classes that we have on the market today, but a lot more in the future. And that's what we need. I think we've seen one real case of failure, and this is a very sad situation. In North Carolina, they made a great decision to start covering their state employees for obesity care. And unfortunately, I would assume the PBM that was associated with the employees' coverage and the manufacturer that was tied to the PBM offered discounts or rebates that were so attractive that they only allowed one or two medications to be used, and they were both the most expensive medications. Right. So when you only have a Wegovy on formulary, one, you can't adequately treat the disease because you need multiple classes. And two, you're treating with by far the most expensive medication on the market. We've just, as a society, as a country, we've never taken that approach. We've never said, let's start with the most expensive medication and disease, and at the same time, let's exclude all of the least expensive medications that are in different classes that treat a different way. And we tried that here in North Carolina for whatever reason. It failed miserably because North Carolina woke up and said, this is $100 million. One, we can't afford this. And two, we're going to pull back obesity coverage for all of our state employees. So now they have access to a handful of older medications and maybe, you know, one of the other controlled substances. But by and large, you know, we've got a situation where, you know, the wrong treatment scheme was used, costs ran wild. And as a result, patients with obesity really don't have the coverage they need any longer in North Carolina. And that's we can't make that mistake at a national level.
Let's continue with that theme of access. We've seen sporadic supply and shortages of some GLP-1 analogs, including those big names like Ozempic, Wegovy, and some of them have these shortages expected to run into 2025. So as if that hurdle weren't enough in itself, right? The price tag of some of these therapies are then substantial. So right now, a monthly package of one of these therapies can range from between $900 and $1,300. Before insurance and other rebates, like you were just saying, the reimbursement, we will set that up. So do you foresee those prices coming down anytime soon? Maybe what's the time frame for that? And what kind of factors can be contributing to these ongoing supply issues?
Sure. So let me take that in two parts. One is the price, because I think that leads to access and some of the availability of product. So we have, for the last, you know, almost 5 years, had a program in place called Cure Access. Cure Access, what it does is it kind of avoids all of the middlemen, right? All the people who are profiteering in the middle of the healthcare system, and it allows the patient to access our products directly. For $99 a month, shipped for free right to their home. We put that in place because we realized very quickly when we acquired a company that access and affordability was the number one problem. So we began working on an affordability program that would allow patients to afford medication. So $99 a month. It is not a permanent program that's going to go on forever. It really is a bridge program to when the healthcare system starts behaving rationally and actually starts covering obesity as a disease, right? So we put that in place because it was very obvious that's a problem. Lilly came in and did a very similar thing. They have Lilly Direct. And I'm so glad they did, because I think they're the first large pharma company to ever put something in place that's kind of this direct the patient opportunity to be able to receive the medication at a cash price that goes around some of the profiteers in the middle of the system, right? So that's the pricing element of it. Yes, the GLP-1s are very, very expensive. We saw, you know, the study come out from Yale saying you can make Novo Nordisk products for $5. And why do they cost $1,350? I don't know if I believe that study. I think it's probably very difficult to have a sterile environment where you're filling, very sterile, expensive glass, putting it into a very complex pen device, and then putting in a box. I don't think you can make that product for $5. I would be very, very surprised, right? I don't think that's the real story. And Bernie Sanders came out and said they must lower their price, and this is egregious. The question really on price for that particular product is, why is it the same product as Ozempic and why does it cost 40% more? And that's the point I was trying to make last week on one of the news channels, is that the question isn't pharmaceutical pricing. We know that it's a very complex situation. And I think it's, somewhat old news. The question is, are there foreign companies out there taking advantage of the United States system and, charging more than they really need to for, what is essentially the exact same product of what they've launched for type 2 diabetes? Is it disease state specific and weight bias at its worst, where you pay more if you're obese and less if you're type 2 diabetic? Or is it just profiteering? And I don't know the answer. That's probably a better question for that company. So there's the pricing, I think, aspect of it. The second piece, really, to your point, is the manufacturing. And this is to tell you the type of situation we are in. We only have 5% of all patients in the United States who are eligible for pharmaceutical care for obesity being treated. It's 95% untreated. And two of the primary products that are key to solving this disease, Wegovy and Zepbound, are both talking about shortages. Can you imagine if this was hitting the treatment rates that we see with hypertension in the 70s or type 2 diabetes in the 80% treated range? Right? It would be impossible to keep up, which comes back to my point of we need more therapies. We need more companies in the space. We need more tools for the physicians. When you have more tools and you have more product competing, prices come down. And so, yes, I see prices coming down. I think if we can get a vote on the TROA bill, the Treat and Reduce Obesity Act, we can get a positive vote on that and obesity is going to be covered. I think we'll see CMS lead the way, commercial payers following suit, and other pharmaceutical companies, large pharmaceutical companies, coming in to really try to make a difference in this space. And we'll make a very, very positive impact on our obesity disease state here in the United States.
So you touched on this a little bit in your last answer, but we were talking about the shortages and the price points. And for contrast, your company, same space, not experiencing these issues at all. So can you tell me a little bit more about why?
The pricing piece is that we've put this Band-Aid in place, this bridge called Cure Access, to try and make sure patients can receive the medication for $99. If every patient that needed to be on Contrave had access to Contrave, we would be having the same problem. We have maximized our production capacity in 2023. So we made as much as we could possibly make. In 2024, we're standing up a second manufacturing site in Europe, because we're dealing with a very, very rapid demand issue worldwide. And so, we've been fortunate enough to stay ahead of the curve on all of that. But who could have predicted this? You called it a craze, I think, earlier in the interview. I think we have people seeking obesity care for the right reasons. I think we have certain people that just are trying to lose a couple pounds and look better. If we can keep these medications in the short term here, we're not restricted, but focused on patients who are really in need, we can make a real difference in this disease. There's no doubt about it. And as more companies come in, and they are, the pipeline is very, very rich across the obesity landscape. I think by the time we're talking again in 2030, we're going to see an entirely different situation.
So you mentioned them a little bit before or a couple of times, but Lilly, actually, they had an ad run during the Oscars that talked a little bit about what you were saying, that people are taking it just to lose a couple of extra pounds. I'm trying to get them for an interview to talk about the strategy behind that a little bit, because you could just make the money, you could just make the money, but it shows ethical and moral standards to be like, hey, listen, if you feel like you have a couple of extra pounds, this is not the way for you to be doing that. This is for people that, meet the criteria, not for people, that have a good relationship with their doctor that can maybe get the prescription anyway. So next 5 years, you were just saying in 2030, it would be maybe a completely different type of landscape. What do you expect to see from the anti-obesity weight loss space in the next 5 years? Like this, we're talking about the same time frame, I guess, but what excites you? What are you expecting? I know you had said that we need more therapies. Do you think that we'll have a significant amount in the next 5 years?
I think we will. You had two things there, and I think just to follow up, first, I want to go back to what you said about Lilly. Lilly is an example of a great American pharmaceutical company. And I mentioned it before. They come into a marketplace with ethical behavior. Here's an example. Mounjaro for type 2 diabetes and Zepbound are the exact same product. Not dissimilar from Ozempic and Wegovy, right? But the same exact products. Mounjaro and Zepbound are the exact same price in the United States. There's no weight bias. There's no profiteering. It is what it is. You look at a foreign company that came into the U.S. marketplace that has Ozempic, and then they have Wegovy, and they charge 40% more for the exact same product. It's just like there are proper ways to behave, and if we're going to make an impact on a disease state, and Lilly is an example, under great leadership, by the way, with great products. It's a great company that's doing the right things, and that commercial that you mentioned is the right commercial. It shows the integrity of leadership saying, look, there's a number of ways to lose weight. And if you have to lose a couple pounds, my product's not your product. I'm trying to use my product to impact this disease that's running out of control here in the U.S. So that said, I think there's going to be an incredible amount of new products coming into the market. The FDA has the ultimate say, and they do a very good job of making sure that only safe and effective products make it to market. But there's over 75 different products in some various stage of development, all going all the way back to phase one. So not only will we have new products coming to market, we'll also have new classes of products coming to market. So when that physician is sitting in front of a patient in a closed door exam room, talking to the patient about their obesity and asking the right questions, they won't have just, 10 or 15 products to choose from. They'll have 10 or 15 products across 6, 7, 8 different classes of medication to choose from, which really helps targeted therapy, putting the patient on the product that's most likely to be successful for them at the lowest available cost.
Awesome. George, this has been a great conversation. Thank you so much for all of your insights today.
It's been a lot of fun. I appreciate your interest.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode of the PharmExec podcast, where we take you behind the headlines to provide expert tips from industry leaders. Remember, you can always find us on the web at pharmexec.com, on Twitter at PharmExec, and on Instagram at PharmExecutive. The views on this podcast do not reflect those of MJH PharmExec's parent company or our advertisers. For editorial questions or to get in touch with our editors, please email us at pharmexec@mjhlifesciences.com. And for sponsorship opportunities, please go to pharmexec.com/advertise. Thanks again for joining us, and we will see you next time.